Support comes from Audiology Center of Northern Colorado, providing caring and comprehensive services with a strong focus on giving back to the community. A private, independently owned practice that provides hearing services to patients of all ages, caring for you as if you're part of our own family. Learn more at audiologycenternoco.com.
Corbin vs. the World was recorded in front of a live studio audience. The character of Corbin is a work of fiction and is meant to represent your hopes, dreams, and your fears, and bears no resemblance to the real Corbin, who actually hates music. This show was produced without oversight or approval from the FCC, and listening to it is probably a crime where you live. You know what the real crime is, though? Taxes. They take and take and take until there's nothing left but a sad rubber chicken. All interviews, jokes, and statements are a figment of your imagination. No one was harmed in the making of this show, except our producer Chris, who is hanging on by a thread. What a trooper. Corbin would like to thank you for listening and encourages you to send him money because he has no other prospects. He'll pay you back eventually, he swears. Anyone who takes offense to the content of this show is politely invited to send their hate mail to Taylor Swift's editor. You are the true tortured poet. Now sit back, pour yourself a cool beverage, and enjoy the ride.
Loudspeaker Studios.
Evening, Vault Dwellers. Welcome to another edition of Corbin versus the World. I am your overseer and tortured poet hero, Corbin David Alba, and I am here to bring you the greatest tunes of yesterday, today, and tomorrow on this, our final dramatic week of April 2024, as the world moves to the beat of a billion Swifties as I speak these words. And welcome you into my universe. Less than 72 hours ago, as of this recording, Taylor Swift dropped her latest super jumbo 2-hour Death Star double album, The Tortured Poet Department. Taylor apparently heard me bitching about Cowboy Carter being an hour and 18 minutes on the last episode and decided that she wanted to ruin my entire life, and she succeeded admirably. So those of you who are having flashbacks to horse sounds and spurs, those of you who are having those flashbacks, I will quell your fears early. We are not doing another dedicated themed episode to a big tent pop release. I wouldn't do that to you twice in a row. I'm not that cruel. Also, it's really easy to do a themed cowboy episode. It's less easy to do a tortured poets themed episode. I'd have to be drunk on red wine through this whole thing, and I hate red wine. There'd be a lot of jazz, and we all know that a little bit of jazz goes a long way. I could read some leftover poetry from my ninth grade journals. Chico could play the bongos, and that might be fun for me, but it wouldn't be so fun for you. So if you tuned in expecting to hear me air it out over some tortured poets for a full hour, you might be a bit disappointed. I also don't have the time and strength in my mortal human monkey body to listen to a 2-hour Taylor Swift album and digest all the lyrics and prowl through the weird part of Reddit gossip forums to decode all the shady ex-boyfriend references like I'm a World War II codebreaker from The Imitation Game. I don't. I wish I had that ability. I wish I had that stamina, but alas, I did not put those skill points into my human build. I have listened to the full album. It is fine. It's good. I can say it's good. And I suppose I should say it's good in the sense that I was able to get through all 2 hours without getting overly annoyed. My capsule review is that it's a notch above Cowboy Carter on the quality scale, but it's got the opposite problem that Cowboy Carter did. Because if you listen to the previous episode, you'll know that my chief complaint with it is that there's like 18 different genre impulses going on at various points. First, it was a real country album, then it was a fake country album, then it just became a generic Beyonce album, there was a sitar in there at some point. Like I said, whole episode dedicated to it, you can hear it. It's a whole lot of ideas in it, but not a lot of cohesion. Tortured Poets, opposite thing. It's extremely cohesive, but to the point where you just kind of zone out on whole parts of the album because it all sounds the same. The songs are good, but it's the same type of good song formula that Taylor Swift has already perfected in her little Jack Antonoff-produced pop music Lab of Death. So it's nothing aggressively new to the table, and I already see a lot of people throwing a lot of flack at the album and at Taylor Swift for that reason, which is understandable, but I'm going to play the Uno reverse card on myself here, and I'm going to go to bat for Taylor in the sense that, think about it, friends. She just got done accomplishing a whole lot of stuff. She had the big tour. She had the big high-profile romance with the big lunkhead Super Bowl winner. She's done a whole lot of stuff lately. She can afford to go on autopilot for just a little bit. You and I have had to go on autopilot for just a little bit at our jobs at one point or another. And I feel like Taylor has earned that break for herself. So I can forgive her for being a little bit lazy at the wheel. I'm sure I'll go back to Tortured Poets at some point in the near future when I'm taking a late night summer road trip and I'm deep within my feelings. But in the meantime, there's other tunes and other artists to talk about and enjoy. So to that point, let's open up with some Jim Jams. And I know I've been talking about a whole lot of normie stuff the last couple shows, your Taylor Swifts, your Beyoncés, so and such. But I want to remind all of you that I'm still a weirdo at heart. And to enforce that point, I've got a little bit of a goofy one for you, submitted for your pleasure. It's The Squeeze by a band called Dog Race.
It's up.
Welcome back, friends. You just got done hearing English band Dog Race with their song It's the Squeeze, bringing some spooky, posty, punky, gothy feels to the opening strains of this edition of Corbin vs. the World. Dog Race have just a couple songs out on streaming right now, but they are already good enough and weird enough to get me hyped up for whatever they serve up in the future. So on this show, we are here delivering good tunes, good laughs, and a little bit of public service in between. Tax season has come and gone, which is always a less than thrilling experience in our citizen lives, but I wanted to let you all know a brief update for me in which I was able to use our government's unrequited love for business to my own advantage. Those of you who have been listening for a minute will know that I kind of dug myself into a bit of a financial hole earlier in the year because I invested in a bunch of the Stanley Cups to cash in on the big Stanley Cup craze this year. I was going to flip them and make a whole bunch of money from it. And I may have dropped an amount of money with more zeros in it than I would have cared for. There was some miscommunication at the factory level. The cups ended up coming out grossly oversized. And they have just been sitting in my studio and in the living room and in the kitchen and in parts of my yard ever since, the garage, etc. There's a lot of them, and I haven't been able to move them, and it has been a bit of an issue. I've lost a lot of money, and I don't know what to do with these cups. I tried to make lemonade out of it, not the Beyonce kind, but the metaphorical good kind, by trying to stencil Stan Lee's face onto some of them because I thought they could be Stan Lee Stanley Cups, and there would be some novelty value with that. But it turns out that making stencils is a shitload more work than I was expecting it to be. There's a lot of trial and error that I do not have the patience for, and Chico refused to help me at any point. And I am aware that you said it was his stupid, unfunny idea, Chico. I am aware my short-term memory brain still works, but at least I tried. At least I made an attempt. If nobody tried anything ever, Chico, we'd all still be in caves, afraid of saber-toothed cats. And it is my job as hero to be a shining example to my listeners, so I have to try. I have to make an attempt. But the point is, friends, that I have figured out a way to salvage this situation for myself. I was Googling some strategies on the internet on how to save myself from poor investments, and I saw that somebody recommended that you can just write off some of your investment as a business expense on your taxes. Duh. And the government will just forgive you for it. So, duh, that's what I did. I wrote off all the cups that I manufactured as a business expense. And as I understand it, most of that money should be refunded back to me, courtesy of Uncle Sam. Thank you, Uncle Sam. I'm just waiting to hear back confirmation, but things should be perfectly fine moving forward. I just wanted to let you know about that for anyone who might be stressing on my behalf. There is no need to stress, friends. Your hero has got it all figured out. The only thing left that I have to figure out is how to actually get them out of here, because there are a lot of them and they are very heavy. But hey, that's a contrived conflict for another episode. So anyway, let's talk about some nerdy shit. I have been thinking and dwelling on the apocalypse a lot lately, not because of current events or anything. I don't know why I'd be doing that, but because I've been watching a lot of the new Fallout series on Prime and having a great time. Fallout is a video game series, in case you don't know. It's a video game series that presents a post-nuclear war apocalypse situation with mutants and bandits and giant cockroaches. Oh my, it's a lot of fun, especially to people like me who love to recreationally entertain the idea of civilization breaking down. I can't help it. I'm just drawn to apocalyptic media because I used to run a lot of doomsday drills with my Uncle Cletus when I was a kid, and those had a pretty big impact on me. I said doomsday drills, Chico. It's when you get woken up by an alarm at 3 o'clock in the morning, so that way you can run through what you would do in the event of an apocalypse scenario. That's why it's called a doomsday drill. Everyone does them when they're kids. It's like the law. Uncle Cletus had to do them with his dad. He told me other people do them too. It's a thing. Okay, just because you have never heard of them doesn't mean that's not actually a thing, okay? Maybe it's a cultural thing, Chico. I don't know, but we did them a lot. Anytime I stayed over at Uncle Cletus's house, we would have a new doomsday drill. Sometimes it would be a nuclear apocalypse. Sometimes it might be a giant earthquake. There was one time where Uncle Cletus covered himself in aluminum foil. He's got these big googly eyes, and we did an alien invasion one. That one was super interesting. I did fail that one, though. If I failed the exercise, then I wouldn't get to have my usual dinner of macaroni and hot dogs the next day. That was one of Uncle Cletus's house specialties. He loved doing macaroni and hot dogs. And so he would eat it right in front of me while I just ate saltines. He called them failure saltines. And then he would say, "That's what you get for failure, Corbin. That's what you get for failing Doomsday." And that taught me a lot about life, I think. And I treasure each one of those Doomsday drills. Even that time during the alien drill when Uncle Cletus was chasing me dressed as the hunter-killer alien, and he had these laser pointers, and he shot the laser pointers into my eye. And when he did that, I tripped over his cat, General Sherman, and I fell down the stairs. And when I fell down the stairs, I broke my tibia and fibula, so we had to go to the emergency room. And when we went to the emergency room, Uncle Cletus lied to my parents and told me I got hit by a moped, which was super embarrassing to commit to, because who the fuck gets hit with a moped? And all the kids made fun of me, and no one signed my cast, and that was very much not a great time, and it wasn't fun. But in retrospect, I think the lesson was worth it. What do you mean, what was the lesson? It was don't fall down the stairs when you're running from aliens, Chico. It's right there. It's in the text. Jesus. Listen next time. Anyway, Doomsday scenarios have been in my head for a very long time, and that's why I made sure that when my special Corbin versus the World studio was constructed, per the court order after my settlement with evil ex-corporate bosses at Poom, I made sure it was constructed in such a way that this studio could also function as a workable fallout shelter in the event of a true Doomsday situation. I have got everything here that I would need to survive. I've got rice and shit. I've got beans from the cowboy episode. I got a bunch of beans. I got like 30 of those big Gatorades that you can get at the gas station. The instruction on how to make Costco hot dogs. I got muffins. I have Everclear for fuel, cigarettes that can be used for currency like in prison. And I got potato seeds because that's what Matt Damon survived on in The Martian. And I figure if Matt Damon can do it, then it's good enough for me. And you can do a whole bunch of shit with potatoes. So it's not like I'm locked into one meal forever. And I would also be able to hunt because I still have my Poom gun. I have the Poom gun left over from Poom and the Poom bullets because they're the only bullets that are compatible with it. And I can use the Poom gun to ward off raiders. Not that I need to worry about raiders. I don't think anyone's going to try to kill me because after the apocalypse happens, I've still got this studio. I'd still be able to do my show. And I would be able to keep doing the show and be a beacon of hope to all of the survivors. And you're not going to try and kill a beacon of hope. That's never happened, ever, in history. So I would be safe. And I exist as a beacon of hope because I spread good music, like the tunes we're about to play right now. Our first trio of songs have some aggressive, dramatic guitar energy, and that's our uniting theme for this. First up will be the artist Glitterer and a 2-minute stomper called I Want to Be Invisible.
Love you, love you, love you, love you, love you, and if your heart is not
Welcome back to Corbin versus the World. You just got done experiencing some strong six-string emotions with tunes from Glitterer, Rachel Chinariri, and Pillow Queens. Glitterer, bringing on our first track, is the project of musician Ned Russin, who used to be a member of the band Tidal Fight, who are very notable in that indie emo sphere from last decade. He has got an album out now called Rationale, and I want to shout it out and give it some special attention because you might have noticed while you were listening that that song was just 2 minutes long. What if I told you that song was the longest song on the entire album? Would you believe that in this day and age? Because it's not. It is not the longest song. It's actually the second longest song on the album. There is not a single song on Rationale that is over 3 minutes. What a gift from the gods, an album that is the exact length of a single episode of Young Sheldon. This is my ideal now in this time where everyone feels like they have to put out albums that are the length of a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Yes, Taylor, I am shading you in this particular moment and everyone else who's putting out the Gigantamongous album. So Rationale is only 21 minutes long. It's got some great bang for your buck. And for going against that trend, and also because I did literally no research at all to help me with this award for the month, I am giving Glitterer my April Hero of the Month award. Let's see that a hero can save us. I'm not gonna stand. See, Chico, I told you that I wouldn't forget about the Hero of the Month award. I told you that we're going to have continuity on the show in 2024. And our continuation in that trio of songs. Second song, that was The Hills by Rachel Chinariri. That was not a cover of The Hills by The Weeknd. That was a great song in her own right. She is a singer-songwriter out of the UK. And finally, we had Aussie group Pillow Queens bringing on that Alanis Morissette energy with their song Suffer. They've got a good album out now. You should listen to it. Yes, Chico, I know you love Alanis Morissette. I know you love her very much. And I just want to say, everybody, that I am happy to be sharing this studio space with my very special rubber chicken buddy, Chico. We've had some rough times. We've had some awkward conversations the last couple episodes, but we have been able to overcome it with the power of conflict resolution. We have been able to talk our troubles out like adults. And that's something that I want to talk about a bit on this show. We're in a very beefy time right now in our pop culture. A surplus of beef in the stock market, as it were. A lot of tension, a lot of shade, a lot of fighting, especially in the hip-hop world. All the popular rappers are feuding like WrestleMania at the moment. Megan Thee Stallion and Nicki Minaj had their women's title throwdown earlier in the year, saying all sorts of mean things to each other in songs and on the social media, and now everybody's ganging up on Drake. That's the story for the past few weeks. It all started just a few weeks ago. Future put out that album, We Don't Trust You, shady album title, that was filled with complaints about Drake in between the lines and in the lines themselves. And then, to outdo himself, Future put out another album just a week later, because, once again, everybody's got to put out the double albums now. So the second album is called We Still Don't Trust You. First album, We Don't Trust You. Second album, We Still Don't Trust You. So that means that the third album will be called We Definitely Still Don't Trust You. And finally, we will have the fourth and ultimate installment called We Definitely Still Don't Trust You for sure. That's my prediction for the upcoming music world. And that album will just be 2 hours of The Weeknd crooning. But circling back, the one album, We Don't Trust You, that had the track with Kendrick on it. Kendrick talking a lot of smack on Drake and J. Cole for trying to act like they're on his level. J. Cole put out a response track just a week later trying to diss Kendrick, trying to get him back. And then he apologized and retracted it almost immediately, which is a very on-brand J. Cole move. So now it's just Kendrick versus Drake. Drake, the head of the table, Kendrick coming at him, and that is our main event. And all of a sudden, everybody in the rap world is trying to get in on the game and dogpile on the feud to bully Drake. You got Future in on it. You got The Weeknd. You got Metro Boomin. You got Rick Ross. Vampiro, the Insane Clown Posse, the Ghost of Old Dirty Bastard, everybody's getting in on it. And I say good for everybody. Usually I'm not a pro-bullying guy, 99% of the time I'm against bullies. But with Drake, Drake has a bulletproof amount of money, bulletproof amount of influence, but he's also really easy to make fun of. He's like Mark Zuckerberg in that way. So I feel like we can all bully Drake without any sort of societal backlash or feeling bad about it. For me personally, the very peak of Drake was when he embraced his walking meme status, when he was doing his yacht rock phase in 2017 with your passion fruit and your hotline bling and all that stuff. I like that era of Drake. I'm very whatever about our current hanging out with 21 Savage. I have cornrows now, Drake. Not a huge fan of that, Drake. We can bully that one as much as we want. So from a sports entertainment standpoint, I'm on the edge of my seat, and I can't wait to see what happens next in this dramatic episode. Maybe they'll fight each other at Backlash in a couple weeks. I don't know. But I also know that this sort of behavior sets a bad example for the people at home, for the kids at home. I have been reading this book I found at Goodwill that's been shaping the way I see relationships and conflicts. The book is called How to Resolve Conflict Confidently and Nonviolently. It's by this guy named Dick Brewster. Dick Brewster used to be a prize fighter, but then he got too many concussions and fights, and now he does speaking tours at community colleges. He's also an ordained minister. So Dick Brewster has got a bunch of really useful advice in this book, and it helped me a lot when Chico and I had our arguments. But there's a whole section that Dick Brewster gives in the book about passive-aggressive toxic behaviors when there's a conflict, and diss tracks is on there, and so is leaking DM screenshots. Those are both on there. And those are things that rappers do a lot. So those are things that we should avoid if we are trying to have healthy conflict resolutions. It also says in the book, there are two scenarios you want to avoid. A physical fight, because that can end in physical pain, or a fight in the courts. If you have a conflict with somebody, don't take them to court. That's another thing it stresses really, 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 really hard in the book. Courts can get really heated and dramatic and can cause the chisel of conflict to cut deeper. That's a phrase from the book. And I realize that might sound a little hypocritical, me saying that, considering I have this entire studio and a lavish lifestyle and a special furnished guest room for my rubber chicken because I sued my ex-employer Poom over an energy drink. But we all know I was in a very unique position to do so. I had a whole lot of people that were on my side who knew what they were doing. And if you had spent a month in the hospital having your kidneys regrown with emergency stem cells because they had been turned into a chemical mush from Power Poom, you would take them to court too. So I had a unique situation. Most people have not had that experience, and I would not wish it on them. So therefore, they should not get the courts involved. Here's a great example of people getting the courts involved for no reason. You guys know Jelly Roll, right? He's that big Post Malone looking rapper country guy that, like, I had never heard of him for the longest time. And then all of a sudden he would just start appearing on network TV shows and people would go, look, everybody, it's Jelly Roll. He's very inspirational. He did drugs, but now he doesn't anymore. And people go, yay, Jelly Roll. And I go, okay, I guess Jelly Roll is a thing now. That's Jelly Roll. And I have no doubt that there are diehard Jelly Roll fans somewhere out in the wild, but I realize I am probably the opposite of whatever his target market is. But that aside, Jelly Roll, the guy, is currently being sued by another musical group called Jelly Roll. And when I say another musical group, I mean a wedding cover band. This is a true story. This is not something I'm making up for goofs. A wedding cover band from Pennsylvania called Jelly Roll, two words, is suing Jelly Roll, one word, the musician, because they are claiming that they've had the name Jelly Roll for longer, and it is hurting their image. Now, the first thing I will say on this, and I think we can all agree, is that Jelly Roll is a shitty name to begin with, and neither artist should be fighting over it. Jelly Roll, as a name, works for Jelly Roll the guy, because Jelly Roll is a particularly large individual who resembles a roll of jelly, which isn't a bad thing. Santa Claus also fits that description. But this is a very specific individual. For a band name, even a wedding cover band name, where, you know, the bar is going to be a little bit lower, Jelly Roll is not a great name. Jelly Rolls have no significance to holy matrimony, no matter what religions you check in with. I would be very suspicious of my potential spouse for booking a band called Jelly Roll. I wouldn't annul the marriage right then and there, but in my opinion, that's a bad first start. And now they're choosing to put their choice of name on blast by taking a popular musician to court. Interesting. They filed a civil suit alleging violation of their Jelly Roll trademark, harm to their Jelly Roll brand, and unfair competition, which means that in my imagination, there has been at least one incident where someone has booked this band for a wedding, thinking they were the actual Jelly Roll, and then been very disappointed when a bunch of middle-aged guys showed up in white shirts and did Don't Stop Believin'. This is my imaginary scenario. I also wish the couple that that happened to a very best of luck in their future, because that had to be an interesting note to start off on. I do not wish Jelly Roll the band good luck in their lawsuit, because it's a dumb lawsuit. You should just change your name to something better. You could probably change your name to the band who sued Jelly Roll, and you could get some bookings off that novelty value. The merchandising would also be good. So, I'm not telling you how to live your life, wedding band Jelly Roll. I'm just giving you suggestions, if you're listening. Or, I realize you could just lean into it and become the fancy Jelly Roll cover society and just do Jelly Roll covers at weddings, and you could all get temporary face tattoos. That could be fun. People might enjoy that. But again, I'm just throwing ideas out. Anyway, you know what else people love? They love more tunes. So let's do that while we work on our deep breathing techniques and enjoy some shoegazy feels. This song is brought to you by Sword 2 and their song, First Rule of the Bug. Now I'm picking you up again.
Thank you. just figured it out. What Shane's been by all my friends. It's a trade, it's a trade. So much better, so much better. Never made, never made. And it follows, it follows, and it follows, it follows. The truth, long forgotten.
Welcome back to Corbin vs. the World. You just got done gazing at your shoes with a fuzzy trio of tunes. First up, we had Sword 2 and their song First Rule of the Bug. Second rule of the bug is don't get squished. Third rule of the bug is stay away from the pretty light. Fourth rule of the bug is make Corbin's summer as miserable as possible with bites and buzzing. And the last rule of the bug is that Bug's Life is better than B-Movie. That's my hot take. Fight me. Sword 2 are a cool, exciting band on the forefront of what some people are calling a modern shoegaze revival in our music scene right now. Shoegaze is a term that gets thrown around a lot in music journalism as a kind of shorthand, but to bring you into the know, shoegaze is basically psych music for sad stoners. My Bloody Valentine is usually the prototypical band that you're going to hear with that shoegaze label, but any band that's got feedback and some echo in their vocals is going to get their title. But that sound is having a real moment as of this moment, so there's a whole lot of bands coming up and around with that particular sound. Second song in that order was It's Just a Bit of Blood by the band Bedroom. It's pronounced bedroom, but it's spelled without any of the vowels, because they're too cool for that kind of thing. And finally, we had the Drop 19s, who were first putting out music when shoegaze was still a novel term back in the 90s, and then they went into hibernation for a couple decades and have now reunited now that shoegaze is popular again. Good job reading the market, guys. Great economic choices. Very smart. And the music is very good, too. The song was called Scapa Flow, off of their album from last year called Hard Light. Our final song for this episode, which we will be playing in just a little bit, that's going to be brought to you from Austin, Texas. The band we'll be playing is called Good Looks, who specialize in some rambling big sky, boys of summer, guitar that makes your car drive forever energy. Those of you who enjoy the War on Drugs, the band, not the concept, we'll take great joy in listening to this one. If you like songs such as that one, or anything else that is played on the stream up to this point, remember to check out our 24/7 music stream using our special loudspeaker app. The stream is called Loudspeaker One, and it is curated by me, your hero, with my impeccable taste for you, my beautiful listener. We appreciate any kinds of donations to keep the dream alive, and to fund shows like mine and others that are produced by Loudspeaker. Hey, Chico, could you get that, please? I'm doing my whole end of the show thing, and I'm trying to keep the energy going. No, I can't just edit between that. I do the thing in one take. I always do the one take. I am a professional like that. So get the door, please. Thank you. Okay, so as I was saying, be sure to also follow me on Instagram at Corbin versus the world, VS the world, as well as our loudspeaker account, Hey Loudspeaker, to show us some social media love, care, and attention. We are going to be doing some exciting things in the future. Oh my God, what? What, they just left an envelope? That's it? Okay, that's... Oh, well, they left just an envelope? Okay, that's actually like some serial killer stuff. That's a little creepy. Who is it from? Oh, it's the IRS. That's fine. I've been waiting to hear it. That is my tax stuff. So, quick pause. Hold on a second, guys. Okay, so let's check on that. Ooh, there is some serious font on this guy here. Damn, guys. All right. I'm being audited?
So few other folks have got. I hope you find truth.
Taylor's like, I'm a billionaire. I don't need to appeal to the kids anymore. Fuck them kids. I got my people. And people in the Taylor tent. Let Olivia Rodrigo have the rest of the kids. I don't care. There comes a point in every artist's career where they're like, you know what? Fuck the youth. I think this was actually Taylor's album. I think this was Taylor's album where she was like, you know what? The true believers are going to be with me. There ain't no one buying a notebook with my picture on it after this.
This has been a listener-supported production of Loudspeaker Studios. For more on this and other programs, visit loudspeaker.org.